It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The holiday shopping season is around the corner, and a new holiday retail survey indicates we'll be increasing our holiday spending, surpassing pre-pandemic levels for the first time. You can be part of this discussion, asking your financial questions, sharing comments. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Emily Guy Birkin is a money coach based in Wauwatosa. Emily, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
So turning to Deloitte's holiday survey, predicts holiday sales will be roughly 4%, up 4% from last year. How could people be saving in preparation for these upcoming purchases?
Well, the important thing is to start thinking about it early. The best way to spend a lot of money on the holidays is to wait until the last minute. So if you start thinking now about what your holiday budget's going to be, and that doesn't just include things like gifts, you also want to think about food. So if you're going to be hosting anyone, or if you're going to be bringing hostess gifts or anything like that, if you're going to visit family, or if you're going to be going to parties and things like that, bringing wine, something like that, you're going to want to think about the cost of travel. You're going to want to think about if there's going to be any end of the year tips or bonuses that you're going to give to service workers in your life. So kind of sitting down and putting together a budget is going to do a lot to make sure that you don't overextend yourself, because we've all had that moment where we go, oh, I've got something for everyone. Oh my goodness, my Aunt Kate is going to be there and I forgot to get her a present. And so you have to run out and find something and, you know, pay full retail price or whatever. So the best thing you can do is to take some time early on before Halloween and just think through what your holidays are going to look like and how much you can expect to spend.
So really looking at it as a whole package, it's not just gifts. It is so much more in the holiday spending scheme. Is there like a quick way to find additional money if we haven't been setting aside throughout the year for, to get some extra holiday cash?
There are some painless ways to do that. And then there are some like slightly more painful ways. For painless ways, my favorite thing to do is to sit down with your credit card and bank statements and look for any recurring subscriptions that you've forgotten about. Now, it's likely you remember that you've got Spotify and that you've got Netflix, but you might have signed up for something in order to get free shipping or something like that. And then completely slipped your mind. And so you can easily just go through, find those and cancel them. And that will immediately free up some money in your monthly budget. So that's one way that can be helpful. Another is consider doing some negotiation with service providers. So like cable bill, internet, cell phone, those are all places where you may be able to reduce the costs that you are spending per month. And then you can use that extra money to go towards your holiday spending. And then the last one that I like to recommend, and people tend to be a little nervous about this one, but it's perfectly legal. You can adjust your withholding at your workplace so that more of your money is in your paycheck. If you got a very large refund in April 2023, and you didn't make any changes to your withholding, you can make changes to that withholding, and it's unlikely that you'll owe anything in April. You can go to the IRS website. They have calculators to help you figure out exactly what withholding you should have. And so you can double check and make sure all your T's are crossed and I's are dotted if you're worried about it. But that's something that you can do. You fill in that paperwork with your HR department, and as of your next paycheck, there will be more money in your paycheck. And you don't have to take a second job. You don't have to drive for Uber. That's an immediate way to find a little extra money in your paycheck every single time.
We're getting financial advice and help with the holiday spending from Wisconsin money coach Emily Guy Birkin. You can join in with your financial questions. You can make comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So Barbie theme gifts. The Today Show says they're dominating the toy market this holiday season. Barbie movie is the best-selling movie of the year. What is the best time to do holiday gift shopping?
It's going to be better to do your gift shopping early. As I said, you know, no one ever makes a great decision about anything last minute and in a panicked rush. That's how a lot of bad gifts are purchased. So if you're going to be purchasing gifts, starting now is a good idea to start looking. You know, if you know you want to get a Barbie-themed gift, now's a good time, because if things are selling out, if they're the hot new big-ticket item, then you don't have to worry that they're going to be sold out if you're looking in October early on, that sort of thing. And the other thing I really like to encourage people to do is to kind of decouple the idea of, you know, gift buying from the November, December, and just kind of, you know, if you've got people in your life who you regularly buy gifts for, you know, your loved ones, your kids, your siblings, your parents, then keep an eye out, like, for the things like, hey, I think that mom would like that. And then you can purchase it and put it aside. Now, if you're like me, you're going to have to leave little post-it notes everywhere to remind you. Because I have done that before, where I buy the perfect gift for my mom, completely forget about it, and then three birthdays later, she gets it. but that's the sort of thing where, if you're doing that, you know, kind of throughout the year, it puts a lot less financial pressure on the Christmas season, because you are picking things up as you see them, rather than, you know, feeling this intense pressure and rush to get it for this specific holiday.
What are your thoughts on gift cards?
Gift cards are a bit of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, I think it can be great, especially for those kinds of the gifts for people you don't know well. Mm-hmm. So gift cards for your kids' teachers can be fantastic. Gift cards for, you know, your cousins plus one, fantastic. And they can also be great for, you know, people who really, really want them. You know, if someone says, like, what I want most is a gift card to Amazon, yes, absolutely, get that to them. The problem that I have with gift cards, and what I worry about, is how many of them go unused. And so there's this huge amount of money that is going out to these retailers that no one's ever actually enjoying. And so the thing with gift cards is, I recommend that people try to get things that that are going to actually be useful to the recipients, that the recipient is actually going to go out and use, and it's going to be helpful to them, and they're going to be able to buy something they want, rather than sit and collect dust and never end up being used.
I also, you know, think about the question, am I buying something only because it's on sale? Because, you know, things will pop up on sale and you're thinking, oh, I should get it now. But that can also be, that can be tempting, but also misleading. You know, what are some questions we should be asking ourselves as we go out shopping?
So a friend of mine taught me this. She did homeschooling with her kids, and so she was constantly on the lookout for art supplies and things like that. And so she would fall into that trap of, like, oh, it's on sale, or, you know, oh, it's knocked 40% off. And she realized she needed to ask herself, would I buy this if it were full price? Mm. And if the answer to that is no, then you don't want it on sale. We all have this tendency, like, oh, it's such a good price, we need to get this. But if it's something you don't actually want, you've spent money that you don't need to spend on something you don't actually want, and it's going to end up clutter. So anytime you see something that's on sale, you need to ask yourself, okay, if this were full price, would I be buying it? And maybe not now, you know, maybe because the price is better now than it would be, but would I buy it full price 2 months ago, 6 months from now? Is this something I would want to spend that kind of money on? If the answer is no, then the sale price is not a deal.
Emily Guy Birkin is an author and money coach based in Wauwatosa. As we preview ways to save on holiday spending, you can be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with a question. You can share your perspectives at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn strategies on holiday gift giving without straining the family budget amid economic challenges and rising costs of the season's traditions. Wisconsin Money Coach Emily Guy-Birkin is here fielding your financial questions, and you can share your thoughts about money along the way. The number to call in is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. In the category of sweets, CNBC reporting sugar prices hit an 11-year high. So with holidays like Halloween and Dia de los Muertos around the corner, where can people save money while also satisfying the sweet tooth?
Well, that's a great question. excuse me. One thing to think about is like alternatives to the traditional. So, for instance, if you're baking, you know, so there are alternatives to traditional sugar. If you look up recipes that are, you know, geared towards people who are diabetic and things like that, there are alternatives that could be lower price than sugar. But you could also, you know, start thinking kind of outside the box. What are some other ways to sweeten these holidays that don't necessarily require sugar? And I mean that both literally and metaphorically. So, you know, some of it is apples are fantastic this time of year. So what can you do with apples this time of year? Even like baked apples with cinnamon is delicious, whether or not you add sugar or honey or anything like that to it. So, you know, those are the sorts of things I recommend anytime there is a fluctuation in price in anything that is part of your tradition is kind of expand that tradition and think a little bit outside the box and be flexible and find ways of enjoying yourself that don't necessarily have to be exactly the same as last year or exactly the same as next year. So that's a way for you not only to add new traditions because you may find something like, oh my goodness, I love this. This is even better than what we normally do. And also to kind of keep that flexibility as you're going through, you know, these beloved holidays, these seasons, to find ways to, you know, make each year feel like its own.
And so with food costs going up or up compared to last year, and you're in charge of a family feast, where can people save on costs for these family gatherings with food?
So there's a couple of things that that you can do to save money on food costs. One is like a tried and true method is cherry picking sales. So, you know, if you get circulars from the various grocery stores, I don't know if they send those out anymore, or come to think of it, but you can look online and find the loss leaders at each of the grocery stores. So if you're willing to take the time to make sure that your family feast is exactly the same as it always has been, you can find the place that is offering a loss leader on, you know, meat or on vegetables, whatever it is, and then find the other place that's having a loss leader on sugar and baking supplies. And then you can do your shopping in that way to keep your costs low. So that's one common way to do it. If you've got the time to be able to devote to that, that can be a way to make sure that you are not spending too much on, you know, the big grocery trip before the family feast. Another thing is to kind of open things up. If it's consistently been that, you know, you host and you handle everything except for beverages, you could say, you know what, this year, is it okay if I have, you know, some people take care of the dessert, someone take care of like the potatoes, someone else take care of the bread. And then that is something that, you know, kind of spreading those costs around among the entire family can be a way to reduce those costs while still being able to celebrate all together.
The thing where we get pinched as a household is that we get behind on our weekday meal planning, and then we get sucked into like this takeout treadmill trap. Oh, I don't know what you want to call it, but I mean, you know, so as we're doing other things like cookie making and we're going to other things during the week, do you have any ideas for how not to just rely on takeout when you have other things going on?
That is another one that's very, very hard to handle because, you know, you get to be, you've been making cookies and it's all of a sudden 6 o'clock
Yes.
and the kids are hungry.
Yes.
You're like, what do we do? So there are a couple of things that I think are really, really helpful. One is now that we live in the age of the internet, you can, and I have done this a couple of times, if you just Google 20-minute meals and you can find something that you have the ingredients for, you can have a meal on the table in 30 minutes. And I think that is really, really helpful. The reason why we turn to takeout is because it's convenient. Yeah. And so if we recognize like, okay, what I really want is a fed and happy family in the next like 30 to 45 minutes, and I can do that with what I have on hand, that is going to be a lot less expensive than constantly going to DoorDash. So that's one thing. I find when I have been like, ah, heck with it, I'll just order a pizza. If I go, wait, no, let me Google what are some quick meals that I can do with the ingredients I have, I generally find I'm much more satisfied with that.
It takes willpower.
It does. If you bookmark those sites, yes, that can be a lot easier. And because it's the same thing, you've got an app on your phone. You click an app and boom, dinner's done. So recognizing that it's about the convenience. The other thing is having like strategic convenience foods in your house. So in my house, that is frozen pizzas. So those are like the strategic convenience food that, you know, it's not the nutrition I want to offer my kids necessarily. It's definitely not necessarily the good home cooked meal, but in a pinch, if we're having a day where like, oh my goodness, 17 things are going on, I can throw that in the oven and we have a meal that everyone will eat. And, you know, just with a side of like, we do baby carrots, you know, okay, we've got our nutrition covered. So recognizing that, you know, what you're trying to recreate with takeout and DoorDash and all of that is convenience. Figure out what convenience can you live with that can sit in your home. So if the convenience meals that you can have, you know, that are already like in the freezer, if there's a Trader Joe's meal that everybody likes or anything like that, that comes together quickly. If you're someone like me who, before I had kids, was like, they're going to have a home cooked nutritious meal every night, having to get over that. When I realized, no, that ends up meaning like on the days that I just can't cook, I feel like, you know, like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to have to get, you know, takeout to get anything resembling a meal in my children so they're not eating goldfish for dinner. You know, there's a compromise there where you can have those convenience meals that you just make sure you have, you know, a couple, three of those in your freezer, you know, every time you get low. And then that way there's always something available so that you don't have to immediately go to takeout.
One thing is comfort in the warmth in the home. I mean, people are spending more on heating bills. The St. Louis Fed says electricity costs are up over 30% from 2020. Where can people save on heating?
Oh, that's a tough one. Particularly, I think that it's been made a little bit harder because so many people now are working from home permanently. Mm-hmm. My husband, for instance, his office has gone fully remote since COVID. So it used to be that you could turn the heat down during the day because no one would be there. So that adds a layer of things. I think that it can be very helpful to be cognizant of where the leaks are. So for instance, I can remember the maddest my parents ever got at me was when they found out I was opening the window in the winter, because I like it a little bit cooler in my bedroom at night. And for whatever reason, the way our house was set up, my room was one of the hottest. So, you know, start with those kinds of leaks. Are your kids, you know, doing things like opening windows in the winter? Are they turning the heat up because they're getting cold? Those sorts of things. That is actually going to be like the easiest leak to cut out because like, oh, okay, well, this is a behavior thing that we can change and we can make things more comfortable in our kids' room without having to touch the heating, that sort of thing.
Hmm.
So that's a really important one that people often miss because they think that like, oh, no, this is just what it costs to heat the house.
We're going to pause there with Wauwatosa-based money coach Emily Guy-Birkin, our guide to holiday spending, creating budgets, and tips for saving in the season. You can be part of this conversation at any point. Call in with a question. You can share your views at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Holiday retail forecasts indicate spending will rebound this season. We seek out Wisconsin-based money coach Emily Guy-Birkin as inflation and the resumption of student loan repayments. They may put more of a strain on holiday budgets. And you can call in with a question. Share your insights at any point in this personal finance conversation. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, one of the biggest shopping days of the year, but some retailers, more than 2,800, according to Business Insider, they're closing throughout the country. Emily, are box stores still the place to be on Black Friday?
I think that is becoming less and less true over time. Now that Cyber Monday is becoming, I'm not going to say it's bigger than Black Friday, but it is definitely rivaling Black Friday. And considering the number of people who don't actually want to do their shopping in person, I think part of what keeps Black Friday where it is it actually became kind of a holiday tradition for some families. So I grew up in retail. My mother owned an art gallery for 40 years. So she was always open on Black Friday. And for me, it was never a shopping day because it was a work day for my mother. But I can recall a friend of mine taking me to the mall with her family, and it was a big thing to go shopping on Black Friday. And that was well before people started doing the staying up overnight on Thursday night to
lining
be able
up.
To get.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is also something I would see families kind of sisters-in-law in the same family, like coordinating with each other so they could each take place in line and then take care of each other's kids. And so I think that it has become kind of a very American holiday. So I don't think it will ever completely go away, but there people really enjoy the excitement of when the big box store opens and the thrill of the hunt for finding the things that are on sale. So I don't think it'll ever completely go away, but there are plenty of us who prefer to do our shopping online and don't necessarily want to come out of their turkey coma to go shopping on Black Friday.
But how should shoppers navigate a store's digital presence versus buying gifts in store? What should we be aware of?
Well, there are a couple things to recognize about the in-store shopping. One of them is that when it comes to Black Friday, a lot of the deals are going to be very limited. So they'll have something incredible at a ridiculous price, like very, very low price. But the stores aren't required to have more than one or a handful of those items in store because they figure once you're in the store, if you're frustrated to buy the one thing that you're there for, you'll find something else to buy. So that's something to keep in mind about shopping while you're in the store. When it comes to online, you want to recognize the ways in which the online retailers have our number. And so, for instance, if you're doing a specific search for things, there will be sponsored items that may be more than you're looking for or more expensive or not quite what you're looking for in among the search items. And then also, when you look at something, they'll very helpfully say, like, hey, do you also want to buy this? A lot of people will buy this when they buy that. So just recognize the ways in which the retailers are not being helpful. They are trying to get us to turn off our, you know, thinking brains and just kind of have us react. And particularly when it comes to the holidays, because we put so much pressure on the holidays to mean things. So we want to make sure that we know how much our family means to us by getting to the perfect gift. And so retailers will play on that to try to get us to spend more.
Well, perfect gifts aside, should we ever buy big ticket items on Black Friday or at the holidays?
I think that if it's something that you would have bought, even if it weren't the holidays, then yes. So, for instance, if you have been in the market for, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of something, a big ticket item that people would buy, been in the market for a tablet, and you've been thinking about it, about getting a tablet, and then you see that they are on a really discounted sale for Black Friday, great, go ahead and get it through that Black Friday sale. But if you'd never thought about buying a tablet before, and it's only because, oh my goodness, that's a good price, and you don't have any specific need for or want for a tablet, then that's not a great idea to buy it. Even if you're thinking like, oh, I'll get it and give it as a gift to someone. You know, is it someone you think would actually like it, or is it just so that you have something that you got at a discount?
You know, a lot of our conversation here is about shopping and going from place to place. But is there, I wonder, should we look inward to find things around our home that might make a good gift for someone we love?
I love that. Actually, some of the most meaningful gifts I've ever received were, there's a pair of earrings that someone gave me that had been hers. And so she saw them, hadn't worn them in a while, and realized that they would be perfect for me. And so that was so much more meaningful than anything she could have bought for me. So I actually do believe in that, in part because the holiday season can really contribute to the clutter problem that we're all experiencing, when you buy something just to have something to give. So if we are, you know, wanting to give more meaningful gifts, recognizing that it doesn't have to be brand new from a store. It could be something where, you know, if you had a locket that was meaningful to you, that might be something your niece would love. Things like that. It's also really, really helpful to start thinking about what you can do for or with your loved ones as a gift. Some of my favorite gifts have also been experiences rather than things. So I can remember one of my sons asked me if we could have a day. It was just mom and Sunday. And that was just lovely. And I'll never forget, we went swimming and he was just, had so much fun with me. I had so much fun with him. And that was, means more to either of us than, you know, a plastic toy that eventually would end up, you know, in Goodwill or the landfill.
We're getting financial advice and holiday spending budgets from money coach Emily Guy Birkin. You can join in with your questions. You can join with comments along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So the debt, how do you recommend people plan for addressing their accumulated credit card debt once the holiday spending comes due?
I would recommend not doing what is very common, which is like, I'll deal with it in January. When you have that mindset, then you end up being like, oh, what's another $30? What's another $50? And you just keep putting it on the card because like, I'm going to deal with it in January. I think it's much more healthy and a better idea to take a good look at your credit card spending regularly. during the holiday season so that you, first of all, you're not going to have that, you know, heart attack inducing moment on January 2nd when you finally open it up and look at how bad the damage is.
Because you've been keeping tabs on it throughout the month.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And it also will give you, if you're keeping tabs on it throughout November and December, it will give you a chance to go like, do I really want to spend this on that? Rather than just like, whatever, I'll deal with it in January. So, you know, kind of checking in on it, even if you are like, I'm going to check in on it during November and December, but I'm going to deal with paying it off in January. That I think is fine. It's much better to take a look in the same way that the other thing that tends to happen in November and December is we get the holiday pound creep because we're eating the cookies and all of that. So it's probably a good idea to step on the scale once or twice during that season so that it's not all of a sudden like, all right, I'm going to be a different person in January. It's just like, I might tweak my decisions a little bit during this holiday season so that I don't have to become a different person in January. I can just, you know, kind of have that be part of the rhythm of what I do for my financial health and for my physical health.
Let's go to Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi. What would you like to bring up?
So a friend of mine brought this to my attention yesterday. It's an ad from Temu. It says that for interest, it says video games. Applicable age group 14 plus. It's a this shell ejecting toy gun is made of good plastic and natural sponges, which are non-toxic, tasteless and durable materials. You actually have to load bullets into a magazine, into a gun, and then fire it. It says the soft bullets toy gun is designed for children over 6 years of age, but it just said 14 plus at the top. Safe to play with and no harm to children. I went to Toast the West. My best friend's like dad when I was growing up is Jay Brightlow. His father was Dale Brightlow. When I was in eighth grade and Jay was a freshman, Dale Brightlow was gunned down in the hallway of Toast the West. So this is this is for 99 cents. I'm just saying, like, to everybody out there, think about, like, you know, what you're spending the money on, because, like, these things have more consequences than just in their pocketbooks.
Marcus, thank you for that. And Emily, you know, Temu, the online shopping megastore, Marcus bringing up that this toy gun and the implications.
I'd also like to point out, you know, it is important, you know, think through the implications of what it is that you're giving to your kids, but also have a bit of skepticism. Temu is very well known for being kind of a scam, where, you know, something for 99 cents, it's whatever you get is not going to be what it looks like in the picture. You may not get it at all. And there's a lot of really shoddy workmanship and, you know, there's a terrible exploitation of the people on the other end of it who are making these shoddy gifts. So that's something to, I think, always keep in mind, is that when you are doing the shopping and you see a price that's too good to be true, it probably is. So either it's too good to be true and you're not going to get the product that you think you're getting, or you're not going to get it at all, or you're going to be scammed. Or even if you do get the product you think you're getting, someone on the other end is toiling away at a ridiculous amount of money, like ridiculously low amount of money for you to be able to do that. So that's something to also keep in mind, is that there are consequences to any of these purchasing decisions you make, whether they're kind of the big broader consequences that Marcus brought up in terms of what our society is saying to children, to everyone, when we are, you know, giving certain types of gifts to people. Or they're the consequences of who is creating these toys, and how are they able to live on the tiny little amount of money they're making.
Emily Guy-Birkin is a money management coach and author in Wauwatosa. As we explore personal finance strategies, we explore tips on how not to overstretch a budget. And there's space to talk. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn strategies for investing, budgeting, and getting out of debt. Wisconsin-based money management coach Emily Guy-Birkin shares her tips that help to build a nest egg. And you can call in with a question or bring your comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Emily, let's get your perspective on emergency funds. How much should we avoid spending and plan to keep in our savings at all times for emergencies?
So the party line on emergency funds is that you're supposed to have 3 to 6 months worth of expenses in there. I avoid saying that just because that sounds overwhelming. When people hear that, they're like, well, there's no point in trying. Because that sounds like a huge amount of money. So the main thing for me about an emergency fund is that it is something that you're consistently funding with what you can afford. So I think it's a good idea to aim for like an $1,000 emergency fund to start. And the important part of the emergency fund is not necessarily how big it is, but the fact that you are continuously sending money aside for it, however much you can afford. So if all you can afford is $10 a week, then that's fine. Put $10 a week in the emergency fund. If you can afford $100 a month, and $100 a month in the emergency fund. And the reason why I say that is because an emergency fund is meant to be used. The other problem that happens with emergency funds is that an emergency strikes and you go, is this a big enough emergency that I should use my emergency fund for it? Mm-hmm. And you end up kind of tying yourself in knots. So if you have an emergency fund that you're consistently funding, what will happen is, you know, you get a flat tire or something like that, that you're not expecting, you take the money out of the emergency fund, you pay that. But you're still building it up because you're sending that $100 a month or whatever you can afford to it. So that the next time an emergency strikes, there will be money in the fund. So when we focus on how big an emergency fund is supposed to be, I think that that ignores the fact that it's supposed to be kind of a living account, mm-hmm. that money goes into and money comes out of when you need it. So, and that to me is what's most important about your emergency fund, is to consistently be putting money into it and recognize when it's time to take money out of it.
Where are ways, you know, people can earn interest on these funds, on savings, and keep that money still accessible for unexpected mm-hmm. needs?
So I think that the important thing for an emergency fund is you want it to be accessible, so in case of an emergency, but not so accessible that it can fall victim to your worst impulses. Mm. So generally for me, that means an online bank account, an online savings account. The online only banks generally tend to have the higher interest rates compared to brick and mortar banks and traditional banks, because they tend to have less overhead since they don't have to have the bank that you walk into. They don't have tellers, that sort of thing. And then if you have it in an online savings account that is separate from your normal checking account, whatever bank you usually use, it will usually take a day or two for money to transfer. Mm-hmm. And so that means that if you do need the money, generally there's never going to be any kind of emergency that, you need the money like this minute. If it takes a day or two for it to transfer, that should be fine. But it's enough of a time difference that it's your emergency isn't an emergency need to go on vacation.
We've got housing issues, mortgage rates hitting 8% for the first time in over 20 years. Should people still consider buying a home in this economic climate?
So I think people tend to think of buying a home as something that goes by timing, and by timing, not as in, like, am I in a good place? Do I have enough money? Is the right house available? They think of it timing like, okay, well, we've gotten married, we're planning a family, so we should buy a house now. Or they think of it timing as the market's good right now, so we should buy a house, whether or not they're in a place where they want to stay for 5 to 7 years. So I think if you're looking at the mortgage rates right now and you're shuddering, that generally means that you're probably not in a good place to buy a house where things are as they are. What people should be focusing on when it comes to home buying is it the right house at the right price at the right time? And if none of those three things are, if any one of those three things are true, then none of them are true. If people tend to fall in love with a house and then they think like they'll do anything to get it and the price is too high, or they think like the timing is right because they want to be in a certain place by the time they're 30 or whatever, but that does not necessarily mean that the right house at the right price is available. And then people get very hung up on mortgage rates rather than, hey, is this something that I can afford with the down payment I have and with what the monthly mortgage payment would be? So really, I think looking at it is right house, right price, right time, rather than focusing so granularly in such a granular way on the mortgage interest rates and things like that is going to steer you much better.
And there might be something you can do as a renter in the meantime, working with your landlord or looking at other options as you try to save more for that down payment.
Absolutely. It drives me nuts when I hear financial professionals say that renting is throwing money away, because renting is providing you with a place to live. It's putting a roof over your head. And so there's this tendency to think of buying as the end all be all, but there are so many benefits to renting, not the least of which is there's flexibility and the possibility of negotiating and the ability to save money.
Emily, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Emily Guy Birkin is a money coach in Wauwatosa, author of 5 books. Her latest one is called Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.